that fascinating presentation. Just a comment about Chevron Texaco. What you did is you've looked at all beyond the environment, so the record of companies like Chevron Texaco in terms of transparency, which was their activities, particularly in Africa, looking at pathway services, documentation for that particularly, looking at the record in a case where it may not be a cause celeb that they be transparent in dealings with African nations. They don't always have an attractive environmental connection. The question has more to do with global disease threats, which I'm wondering if you've looked into at all, because it's so relevant, obviously, given the previous book, which is really fascinating. And looking at prospects for human beings confronting things like the avian flu, bird flu as it's called, looking at prospects for confronting global needs in the desert, for instance.
Let's take the reverse sequence. First, on global disease problems. Dealing with global disease problems is one of the chief ways to solve long-term problems of the world. Many countries, especially tropical countries, are weighed down by the public health burden of especially malaria, tuberculosis, and AIDS. And if you want a cheap, lasting solution to the world's problems, instead of spending $100 million per country when it blows up, it's estimated to cost about $25 billion to launch a global attack on the three leading diseases, malaria, AIDS, and TB. But if you could solve these disease problems, that would be a big boost to the economies of tropical countries that are losing between 15 to 30 years of average lifespan due to malaria and AIDS, and it would be a long-term solution. So yes, I have thought about global diseases. And on the first question, issues of transparency, other things with the oil companies. The oil fields that I visited have been those in Papua New Guinea, but I've talked with a lot of employees of other oil companies and of Chevron that have worked in Kazakhstan and Nigeria and other places. I'm told, though I cannot confirm firsthand, that the international oil companies have found it in their interest to apply similar environmental standards around the world. Because if country X does not have high environmental standards now, you have to count on its environmental standards getting tougher in the future. The oil companies have inherited a batch of problems. There were oil fields that were laid in 50 years ago without dated technology, as in Nigeria. There were oil fields in corrupt countries, much more corrupt than Papua New Guinea, and those posed their own problems. So I would be the last person to say that oil companies are perfect. They certainly have problems. But they are not the villains that I thought they were in 1997. And we consumers, think of the Aesop's fable of how you get someone to take off his or her coat. Do you blow strongly like a wind or do you shine like the sun? If you want good behavior on behalf of big businesses, it's not enough to blame them for doing bad. It's also time to stop praising them when they do.
Before we go to the second question, I'm going to ask the questioners a favor. Please keep your question short and to the point so that we can move forward. Okay, because I can be a policeman if I have to, and you don't want me to do that. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Diamond. My name is Brian Check with the Center for the Advancement of the Steady State Economy, and thank you for all the great work over the years. Your book, toward the end in the parts about policy implications, has sections on population and per capita consumption, as you emphasized a few minutes ago. But what strikes us at the Center for the Advancement of the Steady State Economy is that the policy arena,
We don't have tables
in the policy arena devoted to population or per capita consumption. We do, however, have the biggest table being devoted to economic growth, population times per capita consumption. So the question is, then, would you consider in future work taking the next step from collapse to macroeconomic policy implications, fractional reserve requirements, interest rates, the things that have a tremendous influence on population growth and per capita consumption?
I have a question coming out on macroeconomic policy. I'm going to set a good example. You don't need a long-winded response to what you need. I would, that's my brief answer. And I'll try to set a good example of succinct answers. Yes.
Okay, next questioner, and the third group over there, and I'm counting on you to be to the point. We're not getting the question. Try again.
Just shout it out.
In some of the previous societies that collapsed because they didn't have all the elements of cultural science and technology that we have today, I was curious to know what was it that Japan had to have enlightened leadership? What allowed them to succeed in that system?
Interesting question. What was it that motivated the Tokugawa shoguns to solve their problems when the Maya kings did not solve their problems? It's a fascinating and important question. And it occupies a chunk of chapter 9 of my book. There's a series of reasons why the Tokugawa shoguns addressed their problems. One is, Japan had made the decision to isolate itself, it was self-contained. It was obvious with shoguns and all Japanese that they were not going to solve their forestry problems by pillaging overseas. Number two, the Tokugawa shoguns, having put down revolts and unified Japan, expected that they and their heirs would remain the shoguns of Japan for the indefinite future, that they had something to pass on to their children. And similarly, Japanese peasants expected to pass on their weapon to their children. So they had this motivation, this investment in the future, that caused them to take a long-term rather than a short-term perspective. Those are two of the major reasons, but the other reason, but your question identifies a key issue, which is that it's not entirely accidental that some groups are far-sighted and some groups are short-sighted. There are circumstances that lend themselves to far-sightedness.
Yes, over here.
Good evening, Professor Diamond. My question, I think a certain percentage of the population in the United States who would sense that there are problems in the U.S. or in the world, but they would say the only problem and solution concerns their financial value. And I was just wondering how you would respond to that type of question.
Well, are the only problems those concerned with or valid? Obviously, they're not. If the Great Plains is losing its if the Great Plains is losing agriculture in the United States, is losing topsoil and setting up the Gulf of Mexico, encroaching the Gulf of Mexico, that's not an issue of morality. If world climate is warming, so that Montana we spend our summers, the glaciers are melting, the snowpack is disappearing, and that snowpack provides the basis of irrigation agriculture. And in 20 years there won't be any glaciers in Glacier National Park, and my friends in the Bitterroot Valley will run out of irrigation water. That's not an issue of morality, that's an issue of water. And there are issues, again, if your land in Montana is overgrown by some weed, for which the weed killer chemical costs $800 per gallon, or the weed has roots 20 feet long, you can't pull it out by hand, that's not an issue of morality, that's an issue of weeds. Here are a dozen professions of that sort that have to solve net on the overturns.
In the center.